So where are we in the global pandemic? In France, President Macron announced the surprise opening of indoor cafes, saying, "We will discover the art of living." But two women from the UK allowed to travel to virus-free New Zealand to visit a dying relative brought the virus with them, and Beijing is closing its recently opened schools. The U.S. now has over 116,000 deaths. Some models show 200,000 deaths by October as states continue to reopen, and 18 show a rise in cases. A headline from Tucson's Daily Star reads, "Arizona's COVID-19 infections spike 54% in a week." And look at this note in the Washington Post. 39% of people surveyed by the CDC have been using household cleaners in a very dangerous way, some gargling with bleach. The president suggested ingesting bleach might prevent COVID-19. It does not. Neither does hydroxychloroquine. The FDA has now revoked its approval of the drug for COVID-19, saying there's no evidence it treats or prevents it. But where are we on something that does, a vaccine? We're bringing back Lori Garrett, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance. She wrote it way before this pandemic. And Lori, when you were here in March, there had been 214,000 cases worldwide. Today, there are more than 8 million. What's your top of mind thought right now?
I think fundamentally the problem that we're facing all over the world, in every kind of country and every kind of government, with just a handful of exceptions, is a failure of imagination, a failure to understand how serious the threat can be, and an overriding tension between the economic needs and exigencies of societies versus the need to control the virus. It's all, of course, much worse in countries where the governance is very poor and where government has already made its decision to side on the side of economics.
Well, when you say governments that have decided to side with the economics, do you think the U.S. has won? We have Treasury Secretary Mnuchin saying we can't shut down the economy again, regardless of rising cases. Then there's White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow on Fox News yesterday, who didn't seem to believe claims about rising cases. Let's listen.
We have better equipment. We have much more experience in handling these hotspots, small metropolitan areas. We are not intending to close down the economy. We do not believe this is a second wave.
Lori, is that what you're thinking of? And, you know, if you speak of a second wave, what are you speaking of?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's time to talk about a second wave. We haven't finished the first. What you're seeing now are the fluctuations of a first wave. A second wave is what's going on at this instant in Beijing, which is terrifying. What we're seeing is a very fragmented mosaic of public health and health governance, varying county by county, state by state, and no real serious national leadership forming any kind of coherent, singular response. And so as you look around the country, you see us in New York coming out of our long lockdown, nevertheless opening slowly.
Well, and you also have Governor Cuomo saying, you know, threatening after this past weekend, "I'm going to close it back down," because he saw people packing restaurants and other places in the good summer weather. Do you recommend that? If there's any sign that the curve starts to go the other way, go back, shut back down?
As the weather gets fantastic and you hit a lovely Friday or Saturday night, a lot of younger adults hit the streets, and the streets themselves become a kind of party scene. And that was what the governor was responding to. We've seen this multiple times, and each time it becomes necessary to re-educate the community about why, "I'm sorry, it's not time yet. You can't go party in the streets." But of course, all of this is aggravated by political activities that are in the streets, whether it's protests about the murder of George Floyd or it's the president calling for a massive rally. There is a certain calculus made by individuals. At this moment, I can be less than 6 feet away from another person because there's a higher cause. I think it's inevitable there will be infections unless somehow there's a big change in what the Republicans decide is the appropriate behavior in that rally in Tulsa. I'm very worried also about a lot of the anti-racism protesters.
also the ones in the streets, most seem to be wearing masks and they were outdoors. The ones in Tulsa apparently are not expressing concern about masks and they will be indoors. So we'll keep an eye on that and the concern about that. What other concerns are you hearing?
There's a pretty vigorous debate going on among those who specialize in the modeling, forecasting epidemics. Some of them are projecting a kind of slow burn for North America, where we sort of smolder, and that would have a steady state in death toll and a steady state in hospitalization, which would take you out to September with a very considerable death toll. Now, there's a lot of difference in the models. Some see it more like a series of waves from now until then. As we see right now, we're seeing sort of the impact of the Memorial Day weekend partying. Some models have us hitting about 200,000 people dead in America by mid-August, and others take it all the way out to October. My personal opinion is that we will continue to see sort of mini waves of surging, and that these will come typically 10 days to 2 weeks after reopening events or specific forms of entertainment or activity, and that this will go on into September, and we will hit 200,000 dead Americans sometime around Labor Day, maybe even sooner. And then that we will be hit by another really big wave after we get into colder weather again.
Make the case to Secretary Mnuchin, then, that the economy is not worth those lives.
I don't think that argument will work with them. I'm not really sure that lost lives is an issue for certain people in the White House. I think the better argument is this. The OECD has done its predictions. This is the Club of Rich Nations, if you will. It's done its predictions and forecasts of GDP loss across the richest countries in the world. For the United States, they're predicting a loss of negative 8.5% GDP by the end of this year. We haven't been at negative 8.5 GDP in my lifetime. I mean, the kinds of severe economic shocks we're going to experience are far beyond the Band-Aid prescriptions, the trillion here, the trillion there of liquidity infused into the market. We either stop this epidemic or we have economic collapse.
A couple quick questions. When do we stop it? Anthony Fauci said that he feels there might be a vaccine the beginning of the coming year. Your thoughts on when one might come?
So we have about 300 different kinds of products, including vaccines, in pipelines in various countries around the world. And my concern, of course, is that in our pell-mell rush, safety may take a back seat. And the problem with safety taking a back seat is that it fuels all the sort of anti-pharmaceutical, anti-vaccine movements. And we already have one poll done by Pew that shows 27% of Americans say they flatly would refuse a COVID vaccine. So we have a really big problem here. If there's anything wrong with a product and it goes out too quickly, and it's not adequately tested for longer-term effects, and then there are claims, real or not, then I think we're going to be Sisyphus rolling a rock straight up a 90-degree angle trying to get herd immunity.
Sounds like it's the same as the thinking with the economy. Do it slower and get it right. I got polio in 55. When the first vaccine came out, it was flawed, and people were getting polio from that vaccine that eventually became the life-saving polio vaccine. So this has happened before. Lori, before we let you go, why do you think this has been so hard to get the seriousness of this pandemic across to so many people? Is it because we can't see it? We don't see people on ventilators. We don't see people struggling to breathe. We saw children paralyzed in, you know, the back of their parents' station wagons being pulled up to hospitals, you know, with polio. Is it because we can't really see how bad it is?
Well, I don't know what more you need to see. I mean, in March and April here in New York, we had giant refrigerator trucks parked outside of hospitals all over the whole city, and everybody knew they were full of dead bodies. What more do you need to see? We have thousands of people hanging out their windows every night at 7 o'clock, shouting and screaming and banging cans for the healthcare workers. Do you want the bodies laid on the sidewalk for the cameras? I mean, one of the problems with this epidemic is that it's really been heavily driven in some states by nursing home outbreaks. You know, most of America doesn't think about people in nursing homes. They're warehoused old people. We've already written them off. It's okay that we're losing the World War II generation. It's okay we're losing the Korean War and Vietnam War generation. It's okay that it's sweeping through VA retirement centers and nursing homes. What the hell? It's just a bunch of old people. Well, anybody who has that attitude needs some serious reality checking, just like they're getting some reality checking now that they're thinking seriously about the implications of the George Floyd murder. And it's time that we stop having such a callous attitude. You might not see it. They're not rolled out on the sidewalk for your public viewing. And maybe you don't care about people over 80 years old. Maybe you think anybody that's lived to be 70 has had an adequate life. I don't happen to agree. I find it deeply offensive.
Lori Garrett, Pulitzer Prize winning author, emerging disease expert, go-to on this topic. Lori, thank you so much, as always.
You bet. Take care, folks.
And we know George Floyd's killer hasn't been tried yet. We don't use the word murder. Thoughts on COVID-19? Go to hearandnow.org.